Flight to Berlin.
I'm standing in the heart of the Nottinghamshire countryside, rich agricultural land, and the crops are ripening, and there's a summer haze over it all. It's so quiet, peaceful, not a sound. But I'm haunted as I stand here by a sound, which I first heard on September the 3rd, 1943. Nobody will ever hear again except on record. The roar of a squadron of Lancaster bombers taking off from an aerodrome here in the heart of Britain. The aerodrome is a place called Langer, and here I am standing in it now because I was in one of those aircraft. I went thundering down the runway. I can see it's still there over the hedges. It's getting a little moss-covered now, and part of the assembly area is still used as a light aircraft runway and as an air sock. Trailing rather limply, there's hardly a stir of wind. But in those days, I had arrived here, sent by the BBC, to go and bomb, where we hoped, a vital part of the Ruhr, Berlin, we didn't know. And why did the BBC pick this place and me, of all places? Well, story really goes back to the early days of the war, when the BBC, naturally, were mad keen to get a recording of people in action. But how on earth were we going to take the BBC recorders of those days into action? Because they were cumbersome. We used to cut acetate discs, and you had to drive the disc round by vast collections of batteries. And then, at last, the RAF came forward with a suggestion. Coming into service were now with the new big Lancaster bombers, and they could afford space in order to take an engineer and a commentator into action. And I was called in, Michael Standing for me, and he said, I think you've been selected to go on an air raid. So, your engineer, Reg Pidsley, I can see Reg now coming to see me, says, where's it go, he said. And, well, I was a certain thrill in my mind. So we came here, first of all calling at Grantham for the headquarters of the squadron, and then they said, you're assigned to Langer. I'd never heard of Langer before. Oh, the memories come crowding back as I stand here in the summer sunlight at Langer. But, you know, memories can play you false. After such a passage of time, well, the whole action has become almost like a great drama to me, in act after act, with myself obviously in the centre of the drama. But are these memories really accurate? I thought I'd better check up before I came to Langer. And I went to the Air Historical Branch of the Ministry of Defence, and they've kept meticulously the details of every air raid that took place out of Britain. It's a marvellous historical collection. And Air Commodore Probert, he turned up the records of our very raid.
We've got here the operations record book of the squadron that you flew with, number 207 squadron. And the record of each crew is spelt out in detail in this book. And we can find here the names of the seven members of the crew. And in fact, the writer did a very good job. He's got your own name in here as well as having flown on the sortie. The account records the raid, and this is from the point of view of the squadron. It calls it a bombing attack on London. The target was attacked at 23:31 hours from 20,000 feet with one 4,000 pound and two SBCs, 150 times 4 pounds, including two SBCs, 16 times 30 pounds, and so on. It describes the weather over the target. There was good visibility. Yellow track markers were observed. A timed and distance run to target where red target indicators were seen. Green target indicators were seen, and in bomb sight, the bombing was concentrated. Red fires merging into one very large red fire. A glow visible from the Swedish coast. Three large explosions seen. The window dropped. Good prang and successful trip. Sortie completed.
Sortie completed. Well, he might even have added wizard show. Because indeed, that was how we spoke in those. It seemed a natural language to do. And I'll never forget, when we first went to Grantham, we went there to the group headquarters, and they said, all we ask is say and do exactly what you see. Don't put any trimmings on it. Tell the truth. And then we came on here to Langer, where we were introduced to our crew. And I know the roll call. We shook them by the hand. Devenish, Bray, Stewart, Sparks, Fieldhouse. I'll not forget those names. And as Stewart, he didn't survive the war. But the others, they had their declarations, brave men all. And at their head, squadron leader, Ken Letford, well, he connected the DSO, DFC. He was so cool and calm. Well, I felt an old man because I was in my 30s. And here were these young, such authority he had. And I guess he was only, must have been about 22 at the time. And yet he had that crew in his hand. And we had a marvelous sing-song. Went to the mess that evening and we played the piano and we sang rude RAF songs. And I suddenly thought halfway through, we might be flying over Berlin tomorrow. And I said, what am I doing here singing rude songs? I remember one about those men, near Lancaster, back from Berlin, bound for old blighty shore, carrying its cargo of terrified men, all scared and prone on the floor. And it ended up with a triumphant, for heaven's sake, give Margate as our next target. And as for Berlin, bless them all. Oh, words to that effect. And as we ceased singing, it's about 12 o'clock, Ken turned to me. I was just going out into the darkness of the blackout to the hut just over there. That hut's still there where I slept. Turned and said, we're operating tomorrow. And next day, of course, there came, first of all, the briefing, like the school class, all being assembled in Berlin, just to be. And my heart went down again. And then the ritual of going out to inspect test flighting in the afternoon and installing our gear and Reg putting it in the sorbo, on the sorbo seat, which lies in the darkness behind the pilot and underneath the rear gunner. And I remember there was a smell of acid drops all through that aircraft. And then the final kitting up. We were given something to eat. And it was marvelous. And there was an egg. Baking an egg. It was marvelous. It was known as the operational egg. And I said, this is terrific. And Bill Bray said, we wait till you see what you've got to do to earn it. And then we went to the kitting up, armoring ourselves like knights of old. It was like King Arthur's round table, all in rubber and plastic, of course. And as we kitted ourselves up, I remember Bill nudged me. He said, the crew next door were kitting themselves up alongside. I said, they'll never go. They're not going. The pilot, they knew, and everybody knew, had lost his nerve and had turned back on the previous raid. 10 to 1, he's going to turn back again. And I looked at that face of man, the frightened man, and something frightened in me, too. I thought, can I go? And yet, out we went. There was no turning back. And they took me out, placed me in my aircraft, showed me with my oxygen mask all fitted up. There was I, totally committed, waiting for the signal to go thundering down that runway. Darkness falling, dust coming, fully briefed. And, well, I'm going to relive that raid exactly as it happened. Of course, we couldn't fly directly to Berlin today. The air corridors controlled, as you know, and we had to go by commercial aircraft on a set route. But let's get into our aircraft again. I remember its name now, F for Freddy. And relive with me that raid over Berlin.
Okay, chaps. We're at 8,000 feet now. Oxygen's on. Hello, Skipper. Bonhamer here. Oxygen on. Okay. Okay, Bonhamer.
Engineer here, Skipper. Oxygen okay.
Okay, Engineer.
Navigator okay, Skipper.
Okay, Navigator. Wireless operator okay, Skipper. Okay, wireless op.
Mid-upper okay, Skipper.
Okay, mid-upper.
Rear gunner okay, Skipper.
Okay, rear gunner. Thanks very much.
Hello, Skipper. Will you turn onto course 105 magnetic?
105 magnetic. Okay, Navigator.
Thank you.
Turning on now.
I'd like to welcome you on board this Hawkinson J748, which is under the command of Captain Ash Patel. The flight time to Amsterdam is estimated at 1 hour and 25 minutes, and currently cruising at an altitude of 14,000 feet.
Now we're at 13,000 feet and we're approaching the English coast. And how vividly it all comes back to me. At the moment, we're riding comfortably. There's sunlight, a little cloud base, but I can see the sea coming up below us now. And everything has been comfortable. I've been sitting in a seat People have been offering me drinks. People have been telling me to relax, to make certain I got my safety belt strapped. And I remember, well, so many years ago, when we came up to this very spot, dusk was falling, a single searchlight was wavering in the distance to guide us out, and I looked behind, and as if a giant flight of fireflies was rising in the sky, aircraft after aircraft, still with their lights on, because as soon as we crossed the English coast, out went the lights, darkness fell, and then ahead of us lay the menace of the Dutch coast. And now, a lovely clear sky, little puffy clouds, a glimpse of the sea, blue beneath us, and the Dutch coast lying ahead, welcoming. It wasn't welcoming in those days.
Hello, Bombardier. Will you give me crossing coast, please? Right here, Navigator. I'll let you know in a few seconds. Thank you. Hello, Navigator. Hello, Bombardier. We're crossing the coast now. Thank you. Bombs fused. Bombs fused. Hello, Navigator. Skipper here. Nav lights off. Thank you, Skipper.
As we came near the Dutch coast, I started my first live commentary. A strange sound when I play it back again, because what happened was that there was a slight adjustment of my oxygen mask. We had a BBC microphone fitted into it, and of course I didn't realize I was speaking with a certain amount of oxygen leakage, and my voice sounds strange and slow, almost artificial. I remember when Val Gilgerd heard the whole thing back, he said, "My dear chap, it sounds most operatic."
Now and again, as we watch, see the flak burst away among them, a bright light winking in among the heavy concentrated beams. They've got every single searchlight you could possibly imagine out there to catch us. There goes the flak again. A winking burst again up among the searchlights. They must be having a go at us, all right. I'm watching my, counting the time, watching the hand of my watch creeping round. I know that it'll be our turn in exactly 3 minutes' time.
It wasn't operatic to me at the time. Although my voice sounds slowed and deliberate, I was tensed up and not excited so much as feeling I was seeing something absolutely historic. The Dutch coast coming towards me, my first real glimpse of fear, terror, and what they are there for, going through night after night. I was only going for one night. They were going night after night through this same experience that lay ahead of me now.
Hello, Navigator. Hello, Skipper. You might put down in your log that there are several contrails about, will you? About 500 feet above us, I should say. Right there, Skipper, that makes them about 19,500.
Right?
I should think so, 19,500, yes.
We've left the Dutch coast, we've come in over Northern Europe. The flattest landscape, one of the flattest in the world. Dead level until you hit the Urals in far-off Russia. And our flight is dead level too. Nothing to disturb us, nobody shooting at us. Here we are sitting and I look out on the outside, and there is an announcement that we're descending towards the Berlin area, advising us to make our seat beds fasten. The seat in the upright position. When I came here last, my seat wasn't in any upright position. I was leaning out of a little bulb on the side of the aircraft, the blisters we called it, and looking down on a landscape which was starting to clear suddenly of cloud. We've got cloud now exactly as it was when we came in the old days, 20 or 38 years ago. But then suddenly the clouds started to peel back and there were flashes from below and the searchlights started to stab up. And I felt that terrifying fear, which I don't feel now. I feel an unreal security, a piece of safety as I go, with no trouble at all coming towards Berlin. Ah, F for Freddy. 38 years ago, it was different.
It's pretty obvious as we're coming in now through the searchlight cone that's going to be held over the city itself. There's one comfort. It's going to be quite soundless because the roar of our engines is drowning every other sound. So we're running straight into the most gigantic display of soundless fireworks in the world. And we're due over our target in a 2 minutes' time, and Bill, our bomb aimer, is forward. He's lying prone over his bomb site, and the searchlights are coming nearer now all the time. Our pilot's put the nose of the lank down, and we're tilting away. The furious angle, up comes our starboard wing. It's hidden that Lancaster now. The light flag is coming to us, going right past our starboard wing, starting slowly and then whipping past in red flashes. They've been pumped up at us in a steady stream.
We're coming now on the last stage of our journey to Berlin. These days, you've got to come down into a corridor. West of Hanover, you've got to come down to 10,000 feet. Wouldn't have dared to do it in my day with F for Freddy. We were hanging as high as we possibly could at 19,000 feet. But a corridor now takes us into Berlin. Well, I suppose it's just as dangerous now to come into Berlin to get off that corridor as was when I came back 38 years ago. And a strange, macabre coincidence. It is equally cloudy all the way towards Berlin. In those long days, so long ago, we had cloud all the way. We were just safe. We almost got into the top of Berlin before the flak started to come up and the searchlight stabbed into the sky. And F for Freddy started to weave, and I got frightened. And I suddenly realized what lay ahead of us was a hostile Berlin. Now, everything cool, calm, collected. The pilots checking everything over, making absolutely certain we're in the corridor, coming down through the cloud, and no danger ahead.
Berlin radar controller now is going to hand us over to the Berlin control. This is the Allied Air Traffic Center in Berlin, and they supervise all our flying down the corridors, and they help us to avoid any bad weather and keep general track on us to make sure we keep within the borders of the corridor.
Roger, Berlin, 1040, the squawk, maintaining 905, heading 080 to intercept the centre line of the corridor.
We've just crossed the wall. We come in, first of all, over the western wall, and at night it turns orange. All the lights on it, you can see it from high up. There's an orange line right across the landscape. Then you come over central Berlin, free Berlin, and then the aircraft turns over the wall, the eastern wall, and now we're turning over East Berlin. I wonder whether we have it. We must have come out over it in my day. And now we're turning back into the wall. The wall looks quite extraordinary when you see it from the air. A savage slash right across civilization. And how strange to be flying now into Berlin. And the lights coming up below us. So different from the lights that I saw from 19,000 feet. When it looked honestly as if we were throwing down a mass of sinister jewelry. Just twinkling diamonds on black velvet. Horror, horror. People looking up perhaps to us in anguish. And I didn't think of it at the time. I didn't. I was so intent on saving my own skin. And so was all the crew. We were doing a mission. We were going to drop bombs. And now here we are coming into Berlin with no thought other than to land safely and to a welcome from the people in Berlin who now feel that they're part of the West and going to welcome us. No, I can't get over a frightening contrast. And again, those lights of Berlin starting to shine now in the dusk. And I remember those other lights that we lit. We lit, we dropped the big cookie and the fire started to burn below us. And my inside clutched as the voices came to me over the intercom that we were being attacked by a night fighter.
And now, Arthur, he goes over to the intercom, and here we go to drop our bombs on Berlin.
Hello, Skipper. Hello, Navigator. Half a minute to go. Okay, thanks for that.
Okay, keep weaving, Sam. Okay, keep weaving.
A lot of thirst fights and fighter flares, Skipper.
Yeah, keep on.
Okay, boys, okay.
Bomb door open.
Hello, Bombardier. Okay when you are.
Bomb doors open.
Bomb doors open, Bombardier.
Right. Danny. Danny. It's a long time yet. A little bit longer yet, but it's a new screen.
knob up and down in the center.
Okay, steady. Right a little bit. Steady. Some's still going.
Hey, Jimmy, try to be honest.
Some's steady, but...
Hurry up, Jimmy, hold on. Where is he, Red? Can I get it to you?
Down!
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 He's chopped down!
He's chopped down.
Down! Did you shoot him down?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going for it! Right in the middle! Bloody good!
Lightning. And the lights of Berlin coming up ahead of us, shining in the twilight now. We're 1,000 feet. We've crossed the wall. We're into free Berlin, West Berlin, coming down now. And the beacon flashing ahead of us. And the whole new Berlin with skyscrapers on it and the Tiergarten. We're going right down the middle of Berlin.
Standing in Theodor Heutzplatz, the central square of the area of Charlottenburg. I rub my eyes. I cannot believe this was our target area. This was the area we were supposed to drop the big cookie on. This and Schiemenstadt were supposed to go up in a sea of fire, and I remember they were when I last looked geographically at this place. I was looking down from 19,000 feet, and there below me the earth seemed to be gnawed by fire. And now, here it is, the traffic, the morning traffic, as busy as ever, the streets all around me, reconstructed. You can still see some of the old Berlin, rather like magpies' nests, put in among the new buildings. But everything is crisp, clean. Berlin is a modern Berlin is a clean city. Wide avenues, tree lined, the square, got lovely trees growing in it now. And let me confess, when we were up there so long ago, I never thought of what was down here. I was thinking of myself, my own chances of survival. The horror that went through me when the night fighters' guns opened up and we replied. And the feeling that I was going to drop down into that festering mess of fire below. I never thought down below it stood another city. So I've seen Berlin. There I call it our target area. And now it's a journey home. Now, we're on our way home, and my mind goes back to the way we came home after the raid, when we came through that bullring of light outside Berlin and the flak flying up, and then a little saving layer of cloud again coming to lift us out of Berlin danger zone and out towards the Baltic as fast as we could go.
Now, little lads. My God, that looks a bloody good show, doesn't it?
Yes, it's certainly good playing, I believe.
Yes, the wizard show tonight. They're certainly putting some stuff up, Skipper. By the living Jimmy, she's a wizard, Frank. Look at the stuff going.
David must be dead.
Oh, it's the best playing I've seen for a long time.
They're still putting some treasure up, but there's not much coming besides that.
No, not too much nattering, lads.
And I remember... At that moment, Reg Pidsley, who'd been lying there on that sawbow cushion in the darkness, cutting, cutting all the time, making those risks, we thought we were springing up to sea, and we could look back, and the whole of Berlin was on fire, throwing up. We could see it from 100 miles away, a volcano still in a violent eruption. And Reg looked at it and simply said, "Cool," and went back to his darkness. And we came out over Sweden, so the safest way to come. And we came down over the North Sea. And as the North Sea, we came down, the boys relaxed. We took off our oxygen masks. We talked among ourselves. And we even sang.
Okay, Skipper, cutting. Okay, Reg, carry on. Hello, Bombardier. English coast should be coming up now. Will you tell me when we cross it, please?
Okay, navigator, I'll let you know when we cross it. I can see it coming up ahead now.
Thank you.
It's good to see old England again anyway.
Yeah, after that long day.
Boy, that's a sight for sore eyes, that is.
Hello, engineer. Skipper here.
Hello, Skipper.
How's the petrol going? Are we doing all right?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Everything running okay?
Yeah,
it's
just lovely.
All right, good show, boy. My knees are singing the second chorus of Annie Laurie.
Skipper Reg, can't our good friend the engineer give us a little bit of a song?
Go on, Jock, don't be so bloody bashful.
Don't give me the wind, Doc.
You'll never live it down, Jock. It's not a case of being bashful.
Come on, Jock.
Back.
Oh, no.
Back. Well, the brace where early falls the dew. And 'twas there that Annie Laurie gave me her promise.
And so, singing, we came back over the English coast, dawn breaking. We knew in our heart of hearts we were safe. And as we came down back to Langer and we touched down, the bump of our wheels on the runway was the sweetest sound I'd ever heard in my life. All those emotions. And yet, of course, there they are, that raid, details of the raid, in the official records, so cold as we list the names, the surnames of those who took part. Letford, Captain, Stewart, Connolly, Sparks, Bray, Fieldhouse, Devenish, Pidsley, BBC engineer, Vaughan Thomas, BBC commentator. No, we'd long ceased to be ciphers to each other, and those 4 hours out, 4 hours back, had brought us together in a tightly knit little group that none of us will ever feel that can be dissolved for the rest of our lives. And as I read that roll call of our names, I wonder what happened to the most faithful name of them all, F for Freddy. Freddy, what happened to F for Freddy, our faithful aircraft?
It also shows up in our records. We have a set of aircraft cards. There's one card for virtually every airplane that the Royal Air Force has ever flown since the late 1920s. The operations record book showed that your aircraft was serially numbered ED 586. It had been manufactured by A.V. Rowe. It shows that it was with number 207 Squadron, but sadly, it finished its career on the 6th of January 1944 when it went missing.
So in the end, F for Freddy never came back. What, in fact, does come back from that raid to me? Only this. The memory of the incredible courage of the crew and of the recuperative power of mankind. All that destruction, all that we caused, it's been smoothed away. I saw it down there in Berlin. You know, we're a strange human race. We've got immortal courage. We can face anything that comes.